Worth Repeating is made possible by series sponsorship from the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation.
Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the second part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was altered. Stories about the things that change us physically, mentally, and sometimes momentarily. Can you think of a time something or someone changed your perspective or way of life? Our next storyteller is Miro Hernandez. Miro shares a story about the power he found in psychedelics.
Some may say that in order to find yourself, you must lose yourself. It was December 27th, 2021, and my life was about to be forever changed when I wake up the next morning. I had gone to bed like I normally would any night, that I had work the next day. When I woke up the next morning, I woke up to a barrage of text messages, missed phone calls, notifications. I open up the first message. My heart is in the pit of my stomach. I open up the next message and it confirms the first. Instantly, I'm gutted. I can't breathe. One of my dearest friends in my life, a mentor in many different ways, a matriarchal powerhouse, and just a total badass of a human to know. And above all, someone I was extremely proud to call my hermana. She had been murdered in a mass shooting. Another dear friend had been shot, was fighting for his life. His recently wed wife had also been murdered during this reign of terror. This event would be the catalyst for what would become one of the hardest, heaviest times I've ever had in my life. And the universe just decides, like a bad infomercial, it says, but wait, there's more. The theme for the year was going to be loss. Heartbreaking, gut-wrenching, loss after loss after loss. It would culminate shortly a year after the anniversary of my hermana's murder. I would be one of the first to arrive at the scene of an accident, and I would stop to render aid. I approached the driver's side window to a gruesome scene. The driver slumped over the steering wheel. They take their final breath as I'm standing next to them, and I witness them physically depart this physical realm. To say that shit got really heavy and dark at times is an understatement, to say the least. All this would also happen within my first year of sobriety from alcohol. I have to stress and emphasize the sobriety to alcohol part because I am Cali sober. For those that don't know, Cali sober is a different approach to sobriety where you abstain from alcohol, but if you choose to partake in other substances, if that's your thing, go for it. Well, that's totally my thing. I fucking love drugs. And when I say I love drugs, I don't mean the kind that have you thinking of people conjuring up images of people doing shady, sketchy shit in back alleys for their next fix. Earth can be pretty ghetto at times. I want to make my existence in this realm as comfortable as possible, so I partake in the use of cannabis on a regular basis. Those that know me will also tell you I'm also a bit of a psychonaut. One who experiences altered states of consciousness through different means. For me, my means in particular are going to be psychedelic and hallucinogenic substances, preferably in the form of sacred medicine, psilocybin mushrooms, DMT, mescaline. I've known of, for years, there's been research involved with the studies of the use of psychedelics in helping with depression, with anxiety, PTSD, and just helping rewire the brain in general. At this point in my life, I'm already lost. It's not going to hurt anymore if I lose my mind. So I decide that we're going to embark on this psychedelic journey of healing and self-discovery and just remembering who I am. My plan was pretty simple. I was going to kill my ego over and over and over again. Ego death or ego dissolution is essentially you lose all self-identity, all self-awareness. This isn't my first rodeo with psychedelics. I've achieved this many times throughout the years of my use with mushrooms and other things. So we were going to do heroic doses of mushrooms in order to do this, and we're going to do this over and over and over again. Heroic doses of mushrooms, for those that are the uninitiated, when you hear about people taking mushrooms, they're generally taking about 3 to 4 grams. This is going to give you your standard psilocybin mushroom trip. Your heroic dose is generally 5 grams or more. You're going to go places and you're going to see things. the more you eat, the greater your chances are of achieving this ego death process. The only way to describe ego death, if you've never experienced it, you're a spectator to the world. You don't have a physical meat suit and you're just an observer watching everything happen around you. It's really, really, really bizarre experience. So not only were we going to do heroic doses of mushrooms to do this, we were going to use one of my favorite strains. Mushrooms, much like marijuana over the years, it's evolved. There's genetics, there's strains involved. One of my favorites is the aptly named penis envy mushrooms. They're highly sought after. They have about 2 to 3 times more psilocybin than your regular mushrooms. What this means, it's not the bag of mushrooms you would party with when you were a teenager. They pack quite a punch. And so we embarked on our journey. This was going to happen over and over again. And over the course of the next year to year and a half, I would have many profound experiences. And ego death was definitely achieved on many of different occasions. There's one trip that I had in particular that really, really stands out. And it's one that I still to this day, I always reflect upon it. And it always gives me kind of these chills because it was just one of those rather amazing ones. When I choose to partake, it's not anything that I do spontaneously. It's very intentional. There's a little ritual behind it. And I'm going to fast for at least 24 hours in advance. I wake up the morning that I'm going to do this. I clean my house really good. I make sure that everything's in order and it's tended to. The last thing you want to be thinking when you're tripping balls is your dirty dishes in your sink. So we get all this taken care of. I jump in the shower, cleanse myself. I get out. I measure my dose. We're doing 7 grams this time. We're going to see things and we're going to talk to God. We're going to see what happens. After we get it all weighed out, I load my copalero with copal and I smudge my house. I smudge myself. I smudge the medicine in front of me and I set my intentions forth for the trip. I go ahead and I consume and we have about 30, 45 minutes before the effects start kicking in. I do any last minute things that I need to do around the house. I put on some music because music is always essential for a really good trip. I grab my dogs. I put them on the couch with me. Biggie in particular, he's super excited. He loves the cuddles, but little does he know he's my trip sitter. I smoke myself a little bowl and we wait. We play the waiting game. And right on time, right around 45 minutes, the warm fuzzies start kind of kicking in. I feel like my synapses in my brain are starting to fire. Everything gets brighter. It gets fuzzier. The music starts sounding better. Everything's vibrating. Shortly after this, about 15 minutes later, the appropriately titled Coming Home by the Altons comes on. And by the time the song is done, I am gone and off in another world. I start panicking a little bit. My mind automatically goes, "The fuck, here comes that bad trip they talk about." I start panicking more. And before I could completely lose my shit, I lose all concept of time. I'm no longer in my body at this point. I'm surrounded by faces, figures. I don't recognize any of them, but they all seem very, very familiar to me. At one point, they start speaking, and I instantly recognize who it is. These are my ancestors, and they're reminding me why I've chosen to do this. I'm a big advocate for mental health. I'm a very, very big firm believer in the social contract and doing my part to better myself because I know that my community is going to better as a whole if I'm better of myself. And this is what my ancestors are reminding me. You eat the medicine for the people. You eat the medicine for yourself. And for the next 30, 45 minutes, it's pure bliss and nirvana. I'm traveling to places that are foreign, they're familiar, places I've never been to. Past, present, future, in this realm, not in this realm. And then I start coming down. What a wild ride. I smoke myself a little bit more. And for anybody, for the uninitiated, there's always going to be a second peak. Second peak comes on, and it comes on a lot harder than the first, a lot faster. But this time, I'm a lot more calm. It starts hitting, and it's more intense, it's more intense, it's more intense. And at one particular moment, there's a song that comes on, Sex Folder by Amina. It's a very moving piece. It's beautiful. I'm overcome with emotions. My eyes are filled with tears that just won't stop. At one point, I go to wipe my tears away and I'm gone again. I'm no longer in my body. I'm surrounded by luscious green junglescapes, mountains, bright blue skies, big white clouds, and the clouds are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Everything turns really bright white. It's almost like a celestial white, and it's quiet. And then my mind and my heart are having a conversation. And they're reminding each other that I've been through some madness and chaos and turmoil in my life in the past year and a half. But I had to keep going on. I had a purpose in my life. There was a lot more light to spread in this world. And for the next 34 to 45 minutes, we were in another blissful nirvana place. I eventually would come down from the whole experience. We're talking about 5 to 6 hours from beginning to end. And when I finally come down, I thank the Creator for the medicine that I've consumed. I give thanks for the knowledge, the understanding, and the love that I've come away with. And for the next couple of days, even if it's momentary, even if it's fleeting, I'm overcome with a sense of peace and calm that I've never experienced in my life before. I can't exactly pinpoint any moment in my life where my affinity for psychedelics and altered states of consciousness came from. It's something that I've always enjoyed, and I've done different things to achieve that, to do this over the years. What I do know is that for me, that they've given me a different kind of understanding and perspective, not only for myself, but the world that I live in. And I'm able to approach everything with a little bit more empathy and compassion these days, with a different kind of lens. I understand that tragedy is one of those things that happens. We're all going to die. But I also know that while I'm here, I'm going to make the best of my life, and I'm going to fuck around and find out and do whatever I can to make sure that I'm enjoying everything. And I'm also very, very thankful, because I do believe that the medicine has done its part for me, and it's made me a better person, or at least I like to think a better person for myself and for all those that I'm around.
Thank you, Mito, for sharing the fact that we all need a heroic something sometimes. Worth Repeating returns this fall, and I want to hear from you. Take some time and tell us what you thought of this past season. Suggest some themes for next year, or maybe just give us our flowers. Visit tpr.org/WR and fill out the survey today. Not a survey guy or gal? You can shoot me an email directly at worthrepeating@tpr.org.
This program was made possible with support from the 80/20 Foundation, striving to transform San Antonio by issuing grants to public charities that attract, grow, and retain San Antonio's future workforce. For this and more information, visit 8020foundation.com.
Our next storyteller is Cecilia Macias. Cecilia shares a story about a gut feeling and how it transformed everything.
On average, it takes nearly 5 years to receive a diagnosis for autoimmune disease. That's 5 years. But that's from the time that the medical process begins. I think that the experience, that first inkling that something is off, that vague feeling that your body is working against you, I think that comes much earlier. In 2018, I was diagnosed with Graves' disease, an autoimmune disease that causes your thyroid to go into overdrive. I had gone to my women's doctor because I did not have a primary care physician at the time, something that's very common. Thankfully, I had health insurance. I went in for my women's wellness exam, and at the end of the appointment, she asked me, "Is there anything else? Are there any other concerns?" And I said, "Yes. Something is wrong. Something is not right." And thankfully, she listened to me. She ordered blood work, and the blood work returned with high, sky-high thyroid levels, the kind that affect every system of the body. Diagnosis for me felt like validation. I now knew why I was dealing with sensitivity to heat, why I was dealing with brain fog, confusion, why I was having trouble sleeping, or why I wasn't sleeping at all. I now knew why that when I was in one of my favorite places in the world, Texas A&M University, San Antonio, where they had moved the student lot to a distant pasture, that I was struggling to drag myself across the parking lot under the Texas heat, across campus to the central academic building, up one flight of stairs, where I would stop on the landing and usually try to catch my breath, gather up the last bit of will and effort I had left in me to make it up the second flight of stairs and into the classroom. I would take my inhaler because I thought it was my asthma, and I could not catch my breath. About halfway through the semester, my good friend Sabrina, who had been with me through undergrad and now graduate school, leaned over to me and said, "Hey girl, I don't think this is your asthma." And that was the first time I took a moment to take an inventory of what I was experiencing, what I was feeling in my body, and try to determine what, if anything, could be done. Diagnosis and those labs that came back, that meant something could be done. I was put on thyroid-reducing medication. I was put on beta blockers because I had a resting heart rate of 120 beats per minute. I was told if I did any physical activity, any exercise at all, that I was at risk of having a heart attack. So for 6 months, I not so patiently waited for the medication to do its work. And after initial diagnosis and treatment, once my body had reached some sense of normalcy, I decided to reconnect with my body in a positive way. So in late 2020, I purchased my first pair of running shoes. And at first I just started walking around the neighborhood. I'd walk, and then I walked a mile, and then 2 miles, and then 3.5 miles. And then I started to run. And for the first time ever in my life, I ran a mile without stopping. And I remember that achievement. I remember that feeling of triumph, and then immediately thinking, when did this all start? Was my autoimmune disease the reason that I had never been able to run a mile before? Was it the reason for my symptoms of anxiety and depression? Was it the reason for my miscarriage? My body has been through a lot. My body has carried me through a lot. What else can my body do? So I found myself looking for the next challenge, for the new way that I could push my body and really cultivate this mindset. And one day, I was casually visiting my brother, who was then preparing for officer training, and he was doing something I had never done before, a deadlift. And I walked up the driveway and up to my brother, and he looked at me and he said, "Would you like to try this?" And I said, "Yes." And he loaded the bar with 75 pounds, and I said, whoa, hold on a second, that's a lot. I don't think I can do that. And he stopped me, and he said, "You're stronger than you think you are." Up to that point, I had only lifted my 15-pound dumbbells that I usually kept stashed under the sofa. But he taught me how to go through the process of performing a deadlift, and I walked up to the bar, and I reached down, and I grabbed the bar, and I pulled up 75 pounds. And then I did it again. And then I did it again. And then he said, "Okay, that's way too easy for you. We're gonna put 100 pounds on the bar." And I said, "No, absolutely not. I'll meet you at 90. And I pulled 90 pounds that day. And I fell in love. I fell in love with my body. I fell in love with the feeling of being strong. I fell in love with deadlift. And so a few short months later, one unremarkable evening, I was loading the bar with 205 pounds. And I knew as I was loading the bar, because it takes a few minutes, I knew that I was going to get that weight up off the floor. When you have autoimmune disease, you lose trust in your body. You feel alienated in your own skin. To pull 200 pounds off the floor, your only option is trust. Your only option is to believe that your body can do that work. So I walk up to the bar. I adjust my feet. I line my spine. I check my breath. I reach out and down. I adjust my grip. I pull back with my shoulder blades and I lift. Because I continue to struggle with autoimmune disease and treatment and surgery and complications from surgery, I have not performed a deadlift in over a year. But I have this. I know what my body is capable of. I know that my body is capable of healing, and I know that my body is strong.
Cecilia teaches us to challenge our perception of what our bodies can do in such a beautiful and meaningful way. Thank you for that. Worth Repeating relies on supporters like you. Supporting your favorite programs is important now more than ever. I ask you every show, and now I'm asking you every podcast. If Worth Repeating is a program that you turn to with fidelity, consider becoming a new or increasing your sustaining membership. You can do so by visiting tpr.org and clicking the red donate button today. You can leave a personalized note and tell them Tori said, meow, 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 meow.
This program was made possible by the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, striving to enrich the quality of life of San Antonio residents and visitors by creating art programming and helping people experience art. For this and more information, visit getcreativesanantonio.com.
Our final storyteller is Warren Greed. Warren shares a story about wanderlust that left him feeling a little lackluster about travel.
For those of you who are unfamiliar with the Paris effect, it's the phenomenon tourists experience the first time they visit Paris, and it happens when they're excited to see the sights, they're excited to see the tower, they're excited to take in the culture and meet the people and eat the food. But when they get there, the tower is a little smaller than it looks in the pictures. The food is bland, the streets smell, and the people suck. So what often ends up happening is they end up crying beneath the Eiffel Tower on the first night. And this story is the Paris effect on drugs. It was the summer of 2022, and I had just began to dip my toe into the world of psychedelics and begin the hippie enlightenment phase of my 20s. And my work gave me a week off over the 4th of July, and I didn't know what I wanted to do with it, but I just started reading Jack Kerouac on the road, and I yearned for the open highway. So I didn't know where I wanted to go or what I wanted to see, but I knew I had to be on drugs to do it. So I thought the perfect destination for such a trip would be Glacier National Park, but after mapping it out, I realized a more realistic destination would be the Grand Canyon, which is still beautiful, but still a desert, which I was trying to get away from. But this way, I could stop at other national parks along the way and really take in the sights. So that's what I did. I planned out a trip, and my first stop was just outside of White Sands in New Mexico. And I was staying at a state park called Oliver Lee. It was about 30 minutes outside of it, and I had no expectations for this park other than it was a cheap place to camp and a free shower in the morning. And when I got there, it was around 4:30. I was immediately filled with dread because it was the middle of the summer. It was basically the middle of the day. It was 108 degrees out. There was no shade. I'd rented the wrong type of camping site, so I was going to be sleeping on gravel. And I thought that I made a giant mistake and that I thought about maybe just turning back, but I decided I would just pitch my tent and try to make some sort of shade and see if maybe things cooled down, and they didn't. So I started to explore the park, and the park was nice. It was at the base of a mountain, and there was no trees, but it was cool. And I found out that in the early 1800s, there was a French immigrant by the name of Frenchy who had lived there. That's his name. And that's what people called him. And he had lived there. And he had lived there alone, and he had raised cattle, and he built a cabin, and he built a stone fence that climbed up the side of the mountain. And he lived the life of a recluse for about 15 years before he was found dead in his cabin with two gunshot wounds in his chest. And something in that moment struck a chord with me, you know, and I didn't know what it was, but I did know that the sun began to set and my day of misery could finally come to an end. And I still wasn't sure if I would wake up the next morning and continue on with my trip or if I would turn back. And I thought the best thing to do when faced with a dilemma of this magnitude would be to take half my shrooms now and save the rest for the Grand Canyon. So I did that. I dosed up, and I crawled into my tent and began reading Hemingway until the words began to wiggle, and I started feeling constrained by the boundaries of my tent, so I had to climb out of that, and I sat in my stargazer chair and started looking at the stars, and I looked at the mountain, and for the first time since before I left, I felt good about myself, or about the trip. I felt like I was doing the right thing, and then I felt small, and I felt insignificant, and I almost felt alone until I looked to the left side of the mountain. I saw Frenchie's stone fence climbing up, and I remembered Frenchie was here, and now I'm here. And I looked up at the stars, and I wondered if Frenchie ever looked up at the same stars, if he ever felt alone. And I thought that'd be impossible. How could he? This is so miraculous. And I went to bed happy with a new lease on life. I woke up the next morning. I was ready to go to my next destination. I was going to continue on with the trip. So I arrived at White Sands. I wasn't sure what to expect, but I figured it'd be amazing, and I was wrong, and I got there. I arrived at White Sands, and I immediately knew that the slogan should be, "Yeah, that's pretty much it," because I got there and it was sand and it was white and I don't see color, so to me it's just sand, you know? I didn't think it was any better than any other sand, you know? But I was definitely unamazed, but I didn't feel deterred by that. I still knew I was looking for something. I didn't know what until I started exploring the visitor center and I learned about this special kind of lizard that they had in the park. And it was a normal lizard for the region, but here it was white, so then it could blend into the sand. And I knew that if I could just find one of these shiny Pokemon, that like this maybe the whole trip could be worth it. And so I scoured the dunes for about an hour and a half looking for one of these lizards, and I'll tell you what, the camouflage worked. Like, I didn't see one. It worked so well, in fact, that the only lizard I did end up seeing was when I was driving out on the white dirt roads, and I looked in my rear-view mirror, and there was a lizard in the road that was laying flat, and it was surrounded by red ooze that was squeezed out by my tire, and it's just nature backfiring, you know? I didn't see it. But then I saw it, so it made it worth it. So I didn't know what to make of that, so I just kept driving. And I drove right past my next planned stop, which was supposed to be Petrified Forest, but they ended up being closed, and I didn't care to drive backwards. So, because my campsite was about half an hour in the other direction, and it wasn't a real campsite. It was on someone's private property in the middle of the Nevada desert. And it was scary. I was scared. I was listening to the coyotes, wondering if they were really coyotes and wondering how close they were. And I kept driving to the Grand Canyon, and I got there, and it was okay. It was simply fine. I wasn't disappointed. I wasn't amazed. It was hard to believe that the entire thing was carved out by giant worms. I went back home, and I don't know what the moral of the story is. I'm no super tramp. I don't know if happiness is only real if it's shared. I don't know if sadness is only real if no one can hear you cry. But I do know that next time, if you're ever feeling anxious, if you're ever feeling unsure, if you're ever concerned about your situation, no matter where you are, no matter who you're with, drugs couldn't hurt. Thank you.
Important lessons. Blood is red and drugs can't hurt.
This program is made possible by the Lifshutz Foundation, an arts, culture, and humanities fundraising organization.
That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Support for Worth Repeating comes from the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Tori Poole. Thanks for listening.